Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Marion Gold's career stretches 38 years. 8 studio albums with Alphaville, a number of compilation releases, and 2 solo albums. But it was the first 2 Alphaville albums that had enormous success, not only just within Germany and the German-speaking territories, but worldwide. And their hits Big in Japan, Forever Young, Dance With Me, and Sounds Like a Melody became household staples. Marion has been the one constant in Alphaville, always looking for a new challenge, and recently found it with the German film orchestra Babelsberg. A double album of tracks spanning over his career have been re-recorded, some in a completely new style, and they'll be released this year. Marion Gold, what a pleasure, because you have created songs, you have created music, and the way that you've sung those songs, these songs have stayed with me for so many years of my life. It's a real pleasure to meet someone who has created something that has been important in my life. So first of all, thank you for that. I want to start by talking about your very early years in West Germany, as it would have been called then. You were born in 1954 in Herford, which is near Bielefeld. What was it like growing up post-war in Germany?
Oh, it was, well, the West Germany was occupied after the war. Germany was occupied by the Allied forces. And the area where I grew up was actually the territory of the British troops. So my contact to English pop music was because of that, was quite intense. We had the army radio stations. I played all the rock and roll songs and stuff, and I mean the German radio at that time was just a disaster. You know, they were playing classical music, and I'm nothing against classical music. I'm a great fan of Mendelssohn Bartholdy, for instance. I'm the biggest fan of Mendelssohn Bartholdy. But anyway, so we were listened. We got lots of influence from that side musically. There was one thing. The other thing was where my musical influence actually was. Then also came from the classical side at the same time. So in a way, you know, my way of musical indoctrination was kind of the one of a typical middle class kid, I'd say. You know, so we were probably more keen than Oasis.
What did your parents listen to then at home?
My father, he was listening to basically German Schlager music from the 40s or 30s. And so we had a big musical cast standing in our living room, and underneath the radio with the big green eye, we had lots of this these big heavy records containing all this kind of music. So just because I was so fascinating in listening to records, you know, I listened to all this bullshit music all over and over again, because I mean that was the only thing that I could play in this thing, you know, and it was lots of fun actually. After a while, I started really to love the music.
That's a really bad sign, isn't it? That anything that is played so often that you can get to love it.
Yeah, you get behind the scene in a way, you know, and then you see it from a different side. Probably the bad thing about it, you know, or the pop music is basically first impression thing, you know. So you don't look behind the scene, you don't question anything, you know. It's just like it has to work after a few seconds or so, you know. And but when you, for instance, when you're listening to a vinyl record, I mean, my experience is the songs that you loved instantly when you listen to the record for the first time, they became really unimportant, you know, when you start listening to the vinyl again and again and again. And those songs that you probably did not like very much in the beginning turned out to be the best, the better ones, you know. So it's an interesting receptional thing, how everything works, you know, with the human imagination and reception.
I mean, you were growing up at a time where it wasn't long after the Second World War. And I presume this was like the period of where Germany was rebuilding. And I just wonder whether your parents were at all culturally interested.
Yeah, my father was very much into arts, into paintings. And he was a collector of paintings. And like little vintage things, you know, but basically very, very, very much into painting. And he collected a lot of artists he liked and supported them. I come from a family, well, you say from a rich family in a way, you know, and so that. The fact that my father collected paintings had also a big influence impact on me. And for me, music is also a very visual thing. And I started to, for instance, I started not to paint, but to draw from my early days when I was a little kid. And I was always listening to music and it worked perfectly together. You know, it's very hard, for instance, to write things while you're listening to music. But painting or drawing and listening to music is a perfect thing. And so later on, when I started, or when I became a musician myself, it was always these visuals I had in my mind, you know, when I was composing with the other guys, you know, when we were composing, I always had little videos or little stories in my mind, you know.
What did your parents want you to be?
Well, my father expected me to be to get into his company and to work in his company, and then later, when he would retire, you know, I would take his place. And I was the black. I'm the youngest of five children from different mothers, and I was the black sheep of the family.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Being the black sheep does make you special, and it creates the outsider in a certain extent. And the outsider has played an enormous role in popular music. So how did that feeling of being the black sheep shape you?
Well, it didn't. didn't feel, it didn't make me from in my own feelings very, very special. I mean, I did not like it. I mean, you want to be loved by your parents, by your father, you know, you want to have like, you know, getting compliments, you know, for what you're doing. And I was always the loser. I was always the guy who would not fit into any scheme, you know, into any plans, you know, of the family. And it ended that way that I disappeared. And I went to the army. Well, I was drawn to the army when I was 18. And after that, I got thrown out the army then after 10 months. Normally it was 15 months at that time, you know, but I had some problems with officers and stuff. And so they threw me out.
What sort of problems did you have?
Well, a physical interaction.
You had a fight. You had a big fight.
Yeah, I slapped one of the officers in the face, you know, because I don't know. I had this problems with orders and obeying and all these things. And so I left the army, and I just took the next train from the little village where I was stationed. You know, I took the next train to Hanover, and from Hanover the next train went to Warsaw, with a stop in West Berlin. You know, so I ended up then when I was 19 in West Berlin, which was at that time a very, very special place, and it was a perfect environment for a person that thinks, well, I'm not worth very much. I'm a loser, you know. I'm always losing, you know. Nobody understands me, and you know, West Berlin was full of these people. So suddenly, I was not alone anymore. You know, I wasn't the outsider anymore.
Before we get to that sort of new family, as it were, in Berlin, and not being the black sheep. Just one more question about being the generation after the war generation. I'm also, you know, the son of parents who were in the war, and. Being when I talked to Wolfgang Fleur, he said to me that being that generation made him a lifelong pacifist. How did being part of the generation, the post-war generation in Germany, affect you politically and in your social thinking?
Well, all I can say is that I'm not a pacifist, I think it is very important that you, when you are attacked, you know, by some evil forces, you know, maybe Nazis or maybe Putin's troops or whatever, you know, you have the right to defend yourself. And I think sometimes there is no other choice. That was my opinion from the very first time when I started thinking about those kind of things. it was probably a little bit like a cowboy thing, you know. It was because, you know, this Wild West movies, you know, it's exactly like that. And they deal a lot of times in a lot of films deal exactly with that topic, you know. There is these guys, there are these guys, they come from Europe, and they're pacifists, you know, and then comes the evil force, you know, and they have to make a decision. Shall they carry on, you know, with their beliefs, or shall they defend themselves? So that impressed me very much, probably more than when I was a kid, probably more than the actual historical things that happened 10 years before my birth. In our family, we did not talk very much about the war.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My father was actually not very, very much interested in talking about these things. There's only one thing. Part of my family live in London. And when the war broke out, my father and my uncle, who is English, both were drawn to the Air Force. And my aunt was always like, oh God, they're gonna kill each other. And when the war was over, my father went into a prisoner of war camp. And it was my uncle who took him, who managed to get him out of this, I think it was the 15th of June when he managed to get him out. And since then, they always met at the 15th of June, one in London and one time in Bielefeld, where my father lived, and finished a bottle of whiskey. So most of the things I heard about the war, actually, I heard from my uncle, not from my father.
So, okay, there's this 19-year-old who's, you know, slapped an officer, left, gone to Hanover, and then gone through the corridor, as it were, at that period, to this little island, in a sense, of Berlin in the middle of East Germany at that time. What were your first impressions when you actually got there and got off that train? Can you remember what you felt about that city?
Well, my first question was, God damn, where are I going to sleep? You know, I had no money, I had nothing. I had no intention to going to my family. I was just like, I just want to disappear. And West Berlin was a great place to disappear completely. It was like you slamming a door behind you and leave everything leaving outside. And there was no other place on the whole planet like West Berlin at that time. And I started a complete new existence in a way. So the first couple of months, you know, I was a homeless person, and I lived with all these homeless people in the park. And the first album we did is a lot about these times, you know, like Summer in Berlin, for instance, you know, and Summer in Berlin is about West Berlin wasn't a very nice place in a way. It wasn't a very romantic place. It was in the winter, it was horrible, you know, very gray, very, very much like Soviet kind of black and white. Terrible, terrible feeling, and it's the smell was terrible there from the coal heatings and everything. And in summer, it was very, very different. It was could be very, very romantic. There could be very romantic moments when you were spending your time in the parks and in the shadow of the wall. There was some romantic feeling about it, and. Actually, when we wrote Summer in Berlin, I tried to explain that all these ugly things in West Berlin were, in a way, they could also be, it really depend on the perspective, you know, they could also be very, very beautiful in a way, in a perverted way somehow, but it was just the environment where I experienced freedom for the first time in my life. This is so ridiculous because West Berlin was the result of the opposite.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
I mean, I know that that experience in Berlin influenced many tracks on the album. Obviously, you know, Big in Japan, you mentioned Zoo, which I presume is Bahnhof Zoo, and the idea of buying drugs or buying heroin. Obviously, Forever Young is the threat of nuclear annihilation at the time, and living in Berlin, you are, you know, on the border, and this sort of experience. Were you aware at that time that you were going into a musical direction, or were these just experiences that later, when you went to Munster, were these experiences that later you could reflect on?
No, it was not my plan to become a musician. I wanted to become a painter. And I started a couple of semesters at the University of Arts in West Berlin. And then I had this friend, Michael, and he was very much interested in music, and not only listening to music. I mean, we were both great fans of music, and we had like, after a while, I had a couple of albums. And we were really into music, but more as consumers. And then one day he came up and he had a little drum machine, and we started to play with it, you know, and we were drumming alongside with the drum machine, and then we thought, well, is there anything else we could do, because nobody could play any instruments. So we bought a little sequencer and a little synthesizer, which we connected with the sequencer and let it run alongside the drum machine. And then we heard Brian Eno used like loops from drum fills or so. So we had like this, we also did these drum loops and let them run and then played alongside with some keyboards. And it was very primitive, but from the very first moment on, we started to write music. We never started to cover any other's music. So we composed from the very first moment, and that was actually the point that I would have never expected myself that I was able to compose music, because I thought this is something unbelievable, complicated. and then we found that we were able to do that, even if we couldn't play music. I mean, if we couldn't play any instruments or what, we were able because of these little toys that were just invented at that time. I mean, without this machinery, Alpha would have never existed. Impossible. And then the next thing was I heard the first album of Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, Electricity. And that was just, I thought, wow, this is, they're doing exactly what we're doing, because we felt so alone, you know, because it was the time of punk music, and everybody was, you know, everybody was playing punk music, and everybody was, you know, the guitar was the thing and keyboards were just bullshit. And so we were, again, I was on the bullshit side. Suddenly, you know, there was this band, OMD, and they did exactly what, I mean, it was just an overwhelming experience when I first heard this record. And that was the biggest encouragement for me. It wasn't Kraftwerk, it was OMD. That really changed my life.
Going back to Berlin, because that's a period in Munster, I think, that you're talking about there, but going back to Berlin, Berlin was also the era of the Bowie trilogy. And for me, when I was growing up, Bowie represented, it wasn't just his music, he represented the outsider, he represented the alien, he represented the place I wanted to go and to sort of get the fuck out of where I was with my family at that time, and to get into a world where I thought I would be understood. What music did you listen to in that period that represented, in a sense, apart from OMD, which is the music, the actual music you're sort of saying, but what represented the future for you at that period in Berlin?
Well, actually, it was Bowie. But it didn't represent the future. The future was OMD. Bowie represented something. Bowie was a person that I adored. You know, Bowie, I mean, to be like Bowie was so easy. Just put a little bit makeup on and you were beautiful, you know? And it was just like, it was this outsider thing, but suddenly you know, just because of that, you became attractive to other people, to men, to women, you know? And you could also, you had different personalities and you could choose between personalities. You could choose between sexes. You had a lot of options, you know, when you were a Bowie fan. And Bowie was like God for me. I mean, I covered I think 20 years later, I covered a Bowie song, the first song I ever heard from him. And
which was?
I don't know, Bowie was, it was a monument. It was not like you, I would have never tried, you know, writing a song that sounded like Bowie or whatever, you know. I could sing like him, I could imitate him, but when I was singing my own songs, I could never sing like him. I mean, there are lots of people like, for instance, Brian Ferry or David Sylvian, you know, also heroes of mine, that in their timbre, there was also a little bit of Bowie. You know, when I was singing our own songs, I was always singing like, my voice sounded like me, not like anybody else. And it was a disaster when 2 years or 3 years ago when he died. We were sitting together, lots of my musical friends, and we were all crying. I mean, it was.
Yeah, I hate to say it's 6 years ago. It's actually 6 years ago. Yeah, 2016.
Fucking hell! This epidemic, you know, it's just a black hole. You know, it's. You always have every memory, but you have always to add 2 years. 6 years.
And that's it for part one of this interview with Marion Gold. Come back for part two, where we explore the new album.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply."
At Sleep Outfitters Outlet, great sleep is a big deal. Save 40 to 60% every day on every Sealy, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. Queens as low as $249. Customer exchanges, closeouts, and floor samples. Inventory changes daily, so come in for your dream deal today. With no credit needed financing, expert advice, and up to 60% off retail, it's never been easier to get the sleep and savings you deserve. Go to sleepoutfittersoutlet.com for financing details and to find a store near you.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.